Hi, it's Carol Jenkins.
Good morning, Carol Jenkins. This is Ann Doyle.
Hi, Ann.
Hi. Welcome to this conversation that we're going to have this morning about women's leadership.
Well, thanks for having me.
Yes, I want to begin by basically saying that Carol Jenkins is the founding president of the Women's Media Center, www.womensmediacenter.com, which is a fantastic website and source of information on women in the media. And I'd like to begin, really, Carol, by asking you, and congratulations, by the way, on this tremendous award. You have just won the North Star News Prize.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
Yes. And I know this is given to journalists of color who have made a significant contribution to the public's understanding of the struggle for social justice. So congratulations.
Thank you.
So talk to us first about what, the mission of the Women's Media Center is.
Well, as you know, we were founded 3 years ago by Gloria Steinem, Jane Fonda, and Robin Morgan. They were concerned about two things. One, the participation of women in the media, and especially the representation. Those three having fought long battles to make sure that women were represented correctly, that women's stories got told. At that point, they decided that the system that was supposed to equalize everything, that women would be included and people of color would be included, it just never happened. And it was resulting in some especially damaging ways to progressive women, particularly because we work in the progressive sphere. So we founded the Women's Media Center. I had the great fortune to be there in the very beginning when the idea was hatched. To be able to pull together an organization that speaks for women and that collaborates with other women's organizations so that together all of our voices can actually be heard, and furthermore that people will pay attention to them, will respond to them. And we work in three ways. One, we've created a website where we pay women to write commentaries. There are a lot of women working on the online, on websites and blogs. Most of them don't get paid for their work. We believe that this is damaging to our cause. So we pay women to write commentaries. We decided to do that because 75% of syndicated opinion pieces are still written by men. And you can have some major newspapers like the New York Times and the LA Times, et cetera, Washington Post. They'll have one or two women and 18 or 19 men writing opinion pieces. You know, it leads to the assumption that women cannot put together cogent arguments about important subjects of the day. So we publish women writers. We do our advocacy work, which means that, you know, as a former NBC and I work for CBS, I work for many networks. Now when I show up, I have my fist raised. We call it pitching a fit. That's our advocacy work. We say, show us the women. We're the women of color. We're the people of color. We take them the documentation. They're missing. Can you name them? And it's so interesting who they ask to come to the meeting with us, too.
Oh, yes.
So, you know, that's my post-journalism work. I'm on the other side now. Mm-hmm. And we also do media training because we're concerned about the analysts that are the experts, what used to be called pundits until that got to be a bad name. An insulting way to refer to them. So we started a program called Progressive Women's Voices, and so we select heads of nonprofits, journalists, and we give them intensive media training and then pitch them over the course of a year so that different voices are heard in the media. There are many people who say to us, well, we see African-American women on television all the time, and I say, yes, but they're mostly conservative, beautiful, articulate Black women who are espousing the conservative point of view. Mm-hmm. I think that's great and that's fine, but there should be a balance as well. So that's the work that we do.
Yeah, well, it's outstanding work, and I have a link on my website to that, and I check it nearly every day, and it's a great source of international news about important issues related to women, too. So congratulations on that.
Thanks.
Let's talk a little bit about where you see women in leadership today in terms of, let's say, the progress. You and I have, I moved into the workforce, and I think you and I are probably contemporaries in terms of watching the tremendous changes that we've seen over the last three, nearly four decades.
Mm-hmm.
and we watched women just moving into the professions, and now I say we are a nation of female achievers. But the next thing is to have that significant wave of numbers of women moving up into the really senior leadership positions and taking their places as the 51% of the population that we are. Where do you see us now in terms of that development?
Well, I think we're at the most troublesome spot now, especially since we have such a major, we're in the middle of a major economic downturn. Hopefully when your book is published, this will all be changed. But,
right.
You know, but at the moment, we're watching women being forced out of the workforce, out of their executive positions. You know, a troubling, notice came from a group of women's communications organizations who decided to hold, you know, gatherings for all of the women who've been fired, you know, so that they'll have some place to go and to network and try to find another job. This is in communications, you know, in the media. So, you know, I think that just as we were beginning to hopefully crack that, you know, that cement wall that separates women who, achievers to from women leadership, you know, I think at just that point, we're now having to adjust everything, and so there will be, a setback for both women and people of color that we need to watch very carefully. But it's a curious thing, as you know, almost everybody in journalism school today is a woman. You know, I have friends
yes.
who...
Yes.
Right.
They're 70% of the class.
Exactly. And I have friends who teach who have all women in their classes, of course, women are part of the workforce in the media, but when you get to the executive suites, they are simply not there.
Right.
And for the entire time that we've been running the Women's Media Center, we've held meetings with bookers and producers, women at the very top management levels. Every single woman always still reports to a male boss. And I think that, you know, that cement wall, impenetrable so far, is what we have to work on figuring out a way to remove. What we say here, we've tried barreling through, so now what we're doing is removing the bricks, you know, brick by brick, you know,
I
so
see.
Hopefully this wall will one day just simply collapse because it has no foundation.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the bricks, because one of the things that I'm doing in my book, which is going to be called Powering Up, A Woman's Field Guide to Leadership, is really to have 8 specific qualities in there that are saying, if you read this book, I'm assuming you've mastered Achievement 101 and perhaps all the way to 401, and now build on that, and here are the qualities that you need now to start building and strengthening to move up or power up into the actual leadership positions. Do you have that list of some of the qualities?
I do.
Anything jump out at you?
Well, of course, from our perspective, developing your voice would be what we would say was essential. You really have to master that before you can, you know, before you can do anything else. You know, what do you believe? How do you articulate it? To whom do you articulate it? And what happens if you get brushback? Because I think that, you know, the piece that we find that a lot of women are missing is that when you're shut down, what's your comeback? So that I think that we haven't been fully prepared for if you write an opinion piece and somebody says you're full of baloney, you know. So what's your comeback? I mean, you don't say. What happens often is that people are shocked. You know, it's like, you know, they don't agree with me. You know, they're challenging my assumptions. So I think that. You know, it's finding your voice, you know, and defining it, but also defending it.
Yes, good, right.
So it's almost like preparing for orals. You know, people are going to ask you questions, they're going to look for the holes, and so you're going to have to be able to handle that. And so I think that's an essential piece of expecting the challenge, not taking it personally.
Yes.
And being able to, you know, to drive through it.
Yes. I actually teach women when I deal with that is I basically say, you need to welcome those challenges because those aren't really criticisms. Don't take them personally, but look at them as an opportunity to show you know your stuff.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think, you know, Hillary, I know we may talk about this later, but And her testimony, you know, when she testified before the
Senate,
that was an example of what you have to do, you know, because there wasn't anything they asked her that she was not able to handle. And that is years of preparation. It's a style of being confident in what you're saying based on the foundation. It's not, I guess.
I believe.
It's, I know. Right.
Thank you. Yes, yes. Okay, absolutely. Anything else in particular? Any other quality on there?
Let's see. I think that engage in the world is essential. Mm-hmm. I know that a lot of my women friends who find themselves falling behind their men colleagues did so because they stopped looking at the larger picture. They were busy making sure that their work was perfect.
Yeah.
You know, with their head buried down in their desk and their papers and their whatever, and suddenly they look up 5-10 years later and the guys are running the shop, and this cuts quite across hospitals, corporate life, whatever. Women are so busy perfecting their skills and looking inward as opposed to making sure that they are keeping track of what's going on in the larger world. Where are the larger opportunities? What's beyond, you know, this particular job that you want to excel in? And I think that, you know, that really is key.
And that's related to that whole question about vision. You probably saw the Harvard Business Review, most recent one, that said, you know, women and the vision thing.
Right.
The perception that women don't have vision.
Exactly. And I think that it's something that we have to work on. Most of us have been raised to think that it's our duty to just get this job done and then the reward will come because this job is done well. And, you know, we have to understand that rule doesn't necessarily apply. It's, you know, you have to be good enough, but you also have to be able to, you know, to put it in the world view and to look for new opportunities and to be willing to give up that security of this going to work 9 to 5 every day doing a job perfectly and being able to see what the larger picture is.
Yes. I want to ask you about power, because there's actually there's a separate chapter in this book on women and power. And one of the things I see is that women kind of wait for leadership to come to them, and they even feel some conflict about aspiring to power not being feminine.
Exactly. We know what Hillary went through, what Michelle Obama goes through. It's it can be terrifying to be smart and capable and want to succeed. I always say that my best the example that just really struck home to me was once seeing Carly Fiorina give a talk, the Women's Leadership Exchange. Her book was out, and she was addressing the audience. And, I mean, she was running this major corporation at the time, but she took the stage as if she owned it, you know, as if it were her world. I mean, it was clear that the way she handled herself in that setting, she wasn't glued to the lectern, she wasn't glued to the teleprompter, she knew what she wanted to talk about, she was at ease with herself, and the women in the room were like stunned that
really?
That here's a woman who was acting like a man, you know, that's the, you know, you know, there was, I thought it was terrific. There were people who thought, who does she think she is, you know? And, so I think that it's that issue of she was doing what she was taught to do. You know, you have to master the stage, you have to master your material, you have to connect with the audience, and there is no reason for you to feel that you have to be in a fallback, feminine, shy position. It's, you know, again, what many people perceive as feminine.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly right. And you mentioned something I'm also wondering about is, too often, women still are our own worst enemies in terms of undermining one another rather than realizing that every woman for herself is a losing strategy.
Precisely. Mm-hmm. And I think the more we see, I think that The more we see examples of coming back from setbacks, once again in our political life, the fact that, you know, there's a position of Secretary of State, there's a, you know, that women are being put into the administration, that they're, I think that, that this should be an encouragement to women to, when it seems as if the world has come to an end because a particular job hasn't been won, doesn't mean that there still can't be success. You know, I worry about some women who at that point, when they get a major setback, retreat into a shell, are inordinately embarrassed by it as opposed to looking for the next opportunity. And I think I think that other women watching that get afraid and blaming and, you know, just, you know, behavior that I think that comes from too many years of frustration, quite frankly, of seeing women being dissed and not engaged at the highest level. So, you know, I think so we have to work on that.
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about Hillary Clinton's obvious run for presidency and now ascending to Secretary of State. And I mean, I thought it was a fascinating example of, you know, swallowing your pride. And it really showed to me a lot about not only Hillary Clinton, but about Barack Obama.
Exactly.
The way both of them were able to, you know, he to make the offer and her to accept and come together. You know, a team of rivals, you know.
Exactly.
And
with some of their supporters from both sides saying, wait.
Yeah. We don't know. I know I had women going, well, Hillary may be okay about this, but I'm not. And I thought it was just a fabulous national example for our mental template.
Right.
Yes. Well, I've so much to talk to you about, and time goes by so quickly. Let me ask you about Michelle Obama, because here we have another fascinating national woman and a woman of color on the national international stage. What do you see in terms of the potential for her to move us forward?
I just think that, you know, that she is terrific. I think not afraid to be a wife or afraid to be a mother. I know that she's taken some criticism for talking about that. You know, many women I know say, why doesn't she say give her degrees, you know, and her own accomplishments? Why is she, quote, pretending to be a wife and a mother? And, you know, I'm saying, I don't think she's pretending. She is a wife and she is a mother, and she's handling those assignments, if you will, with grace and dignity, and I think in a very wholesome way. I know that he has talked about her solid family and the family that she's created with him. I think these are tremendous examples for all of us who, you know, come from broken families and marriages and all of that. You know, I was a single mother, you know, and I think that, you know, the example that she is setting, raising her children on good relations with her mother, and he's on good relations.
Yeah, he is with his mother-in-law, right?
With his mother-in-law. This is, I think, a reworking of the family dynamic that we need desperately. You know, that families don't necessarily need to be hateful and, you know, fractious. They can be supportive, and this can be a supportive piece of our lives. So I think that, you know, on the front end, as she says, going into this, into the White House and into this leadership role, you know, the being a support for her husband and being a mother to her children for now is the work that she's doing. She said it, you know, indicated that there, and she'll be brilliant at it, you know, issues for women and children that she wants to pursue, you know, when she can. But I think, you know, she's exactly in the situation, only light years ahead in terms of the public perception of it, of being able to run for herself for president, just as Hillary did.
I was just thinking that.
Right. Years down the road.
Right. Isn't that fascinating?
Right.
And I think that piece of women owning that work as really valuable, important work, and the idea that I'm also going to talk about in my book is that, why is it that men's military experience or sports experience is seen as transferable leadership experience to the professional world, whereas women's development of talent and managing conflict and all the things that you do in the lead role as the parent isn't seen as transferable, and I think we have to own that, those transferable skills.
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's the, you know, it's the diminishment, you know, it's the same, you know, women coming back into the workforce after doing this, as I'm sure you're talking about. It's just, you know, that's lost zero time, and, you know, all of that has to change, so...
We have to change it, I think.
Right, right. And I think her being in the White House will change it, because quite clearly, she's, you know, articulate enough to, you know, she's articulate. She can talk about what she's doing in a way that will help other people to understand the value of what she's doing. I can't imagine how the world would have responded if she said, oh, yes, I'm going to work full-time and, you know, let these girls...
Right.
Yeah, let somebody else take care of my girls.
Yes, exactly. Time is flying here, and I have just a couple more minutes with you this time.
Okay.
But I wanted to ask you about something. I have used your fantastic video, Sexism Self, in speeches that I have given.
Oh, great. Thank you.
Yes, I had. I took it not long ago to Indiana University, and it was fascinating for me to watch the mouths hanging open on students in the lecture halls.
Right.
Young men and young women, and then led an incredible conversation about it because, you know, to put it all together like that, it's a very powerful piece. But I want to ask you, related to that, I did an interview recently with a fantastic young early 30s African woman from Africa, an African leader.
Mm-hmm.
I'm part of the International Women's Forum, which I believe you are as well. And she said, I said to her, what do you think is the role of American women in the world to help lift women throughout the world? And she brought up something that herself. She said, I think that women have no idea the impact, the demeaning cultural media, videos, television images of women that the United States is exporting throughout the world that is demeaning women all over the world. It's one of your biggest exports, and the image of women being portrayed by American culture today is destructive. And she said, I don't think American women have any idea of it, and it's an important battle to be fought. Do you have a thought on that?
How smart she is, right? Because, you know, really this piece of, you know, we sometimes emphasize the participation because we think that's the way all of this will change. The more women you have, the more, the less, you know, these kinds of things will be developed and thought to be so terrific. And it is the representation, and we are, as I often say in that, you know, the way you, I don't know, you boil, the easiest way to boil somebody is just slowly turn up the heat. And
the frog, yes.
Exactly. They don't even know.
They don't know.
And that's us, really. We've been swilling in this for so long. We don't even recognize it when we see it. And that was the reaction. There were people who swore to us and challenged us that there was no such thing as sexism in the media, that we were being hysterical. And it was only when we showed that video, and we took that to the networks, by the way, to show them how their people responded. They were shocked, you know, even though they were there when it happened, because we've been living in this for so long, we don't recognize it. We think that's the way it's supposed to be. It's okay to insult women. So she's absolutely right, and that's precisely what we're fighting against, to make people aware it is not okay.
And what women, I believe today, I mean, I remember when we stood up to things like that, and it was not okay. I mean, it became politically incorrect to say things like that. And then I think this whole thing happened where feminism became a dirty word.
Exactly.
You know, people really, like, backed off and realized they had to soften up, you know. And then you had a generation that really doesn't know the history. And I think that there's a leadership role, really, in terms of educating the younger women coming in who've just kind of grown up with this and need... Do we need consciousness raising again, Carol?
We do. We do. And actually, we're a part of a consciousness raising effort. The Ms. Foundation and Elizabeth Sackler, the philanthropist, and I were all a part of what we call Unfinished Business, where we meet regularly with younger women.
Good.
And we're doing a conference with them, you know, so we have conversations where you know, it gets very heated at, you know, at points where these younger women tell us off for what we have done or haven't done, you know, correctly, and we try to tell them what we've been through so that there's a broader understanding. But absolutely we need to engage with younger women, and you're right, that's precisely, Gloria said, it's just like the 70s, right? We have to meet with the young women,
yes,
so that they understand.
Right, and talk to each other, and courage is contagious.
Right. So we absolutely see that as a piece of the Women's Media Center work to, you know, to make sure that the young women are brought into this conversation so that they understand, you know, that I was on a panel with a young conservative woman recently, and she said to me, I'm just sick of all of this whining that you feminists are doing. She says, I understand that I have to work twice as hard as a man to get anywhere in the world, you know.
And I said, that's okay with her, I guess.
I said, that, my dear, is what sexism is, and that is why we need feminism. You should not have to work twice as hard, do you understand? But that's the case of, that's always, you know, that's what she's experienced, even as a young woman, and she accepts it, you know, and she accepts it because she wants to be a part of the, you know, a part of, as opposed to separated out, a whiner. But, you know, so that we have a lot of work to do here. So as Gloria says, every organization she started it with the hope that she would put herself out of business. Unfortunately, they're all
not going to happen in our lifetime.
Not going to happen anytime soon.
No, there's plenty of work to do. Well, Carol, is there anything you'd like to add here before we run out of time?
Well, just thank you for the work you're doing about leadership, because I think it's, you know, this really has to be our focus, getting into those top levels of leadership, figuring out a way to get there and to stay there. So bravo to you on your work.
Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate you taking the time to talk to me. I'll keep you posted on how things are going, and I look forward to meeting you. And may I call you once we hang up, just for a last one-minute wrap-up?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
All righty. Thanks.
Thank you, Carol.
All righty.
Women's
Bye-bye.
Media Center, founding president.